From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Paul Big Apple Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Today, we're going to talk about a company called Google, commonly known as Google. That's its street name. It's such a popular name that it's become a verb in American English. They have a parent company, you could call it the real company, which is known as Alphabet. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but we want to, whenever we mention Google, establish that from the jump, at the top, because it's strange how relatively obscure that fact remains. Now, while Google, Alphabet, whatever you want to call it, may not be the largest company in the world in terms of capital or territory or material possessions, it is undoubtedly one of the most influential organizations on the planet, at least in terms of its connection to human beings or the ways in which it influences networks or organizations or webs of human beings. Most people on this planet, literally most people, think about that, have heard of Google, even if they have somehow not directly interacted with it. And arguably, on a slightly more controversial note, most people have in some way, to some degree, been affected by the actions of the U.S. military, whether that's something that happened generations ago in their own country or an adjacent country or to an ancestor, or whether something is happening to them now as we record this episode. And so today begins with a question. Spoiler alert, it also ends with a question. And our beginning question is this. What happens when these groups, Google, Alphabet, whatever you want to call it, and the U.S. military or Uncle Sam, what happens when they join forces? Because they have. So they have Voltroned up, and they have Voltroned up in a, again, controversial way. It involves unmanned aerial systems, also known as drones.
These are the ones that like deliver your Amazon packages, right?
Yeah, and some variation of them, yeah. They're commonly called drones, of course, but unmanned aerial vehicles or UAVs have been a long-running trope in science fiction. And surprisingly, for many people, some version of this technology existed long before the modern day. There wasn't a history-rattling moment when the first drone ever went airborne. And that's in large part because it's very difficult for us to isolate exactly when the early version of an invention ends and the first modern versions begin. Matt, when you and I worked on the invention show Stuff of Genius, we ran into this pretty often. Somebody comes up with a rough approximation of an idea, and then over a course of years, decades, or even centuries in some cases, people continually make small improvements until it becomes the thing we know. Most inventions are not a eureka moment in reality. I mean, they may be a eureka moment in terms of the idea or the epiphany, but most inventions in reality, when we get to the hardware phases, are going to be created by people standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, it ends up being the person who makes it marketable rather than just creates it.
Oh, good call. And a very sad and capitalist call, right? It's the person who popularizes it. So if we look at the first modern version of a drone, an unmanned vehicle, would it be one of those bombs in the 1800s that was strapped to a balloon and then just sort of put off like something bad will happen, we can't steer it? There wasn't a person on that, and it was being used as a weapon. Or was it the initial V-1 rockets that Germany deployed during World War II? In the early 1900s, military groups did use drones. They had radio-controlled versions that were just for target practice. engineers developed unmanned aircraft that, again, had munitions of some sort. These weren't drones the way we think of them in the current age, but there's, you know, there are other examples like cruise missiles. These things were the first cruise missiles, often called flying torpedoes. They were not meant to return to base. And drones are meant to function like very, very smart, sometimes very, very deadly boomerangs. They come out, they come back, and somebody claps.
Yeah. Generally not the people being targeted.
Generally, yes, yes. Generally not. You are correct, my friend. During the Cold War and the Vietnam War, or the series of conflicts collectively known as the Vietnam War here in the U.S., Uncle Sam ramped up research on drones. It was no longer just an interesting idea posed by a few eccentric scientists and engineers. In fact, by the time of the Vietnam War, unmanned drones flew thousands of high-risk reconnaissance missions, and they got shot down all the time. But in that process, they saved the lives of human pilots who otherwise would have been aboard. And I thought about you, Matt, when I was looking into this, because another precedent for drones, which we won't go into in this episode, but another precedent for drones were weaponized bats. Did you ever hear about this?
The ones that drop the little bombs?
Yeah, well, yes, that's a version of it.
Yeah.
They said bats can fly. We have access to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could go back to carrier pigeons as being a type of drone as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a person aboard.
There's a really cool episode of the podcast, The Memory Palace, about the bats. It's called Itty Bitty Bombs. It's quite
nice.
Good.
Yeah.
So check that one out for more information. Around the same time, Vietnam War, it goes this far back, around the same time of the Vietnam War, engineers started adding real-time surveillance ability to drones, so cameras, right? Today, we look at, I guess the closest thing we have to a military version of the first drone would be the MQ-1 Predator. It was first unveiled in 1995, which is weird when you think about it because that was such a long time ago. And in 2002, the CIA used the MQ-1 Predator to make its first successful kill of a quote-unquote enemy combatant in Afghanistan. Since then, since just 2002, this technology has grown by cartoonishly extreme leaps and bounds, and it's currently on the bleeding edge of scientific advancement.
Yeah, and if that MQ-1 Predator drone, that's the drone that you have seen before. That's the one that is in pictures all over the place. That is the, I mean, I guess being one of the first, it just became iconic in that way. Just going to want to throw that in there.
Yeah, it looks like a windowless commercial plane with an upside-down tail fin. Right? Two upside-down tail fins.
Yeah, it's got the shape is slightly odd, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
And as these drones become more and more common in theaters of war or in commercial industries like Amazon using them or recreational use, like you buy a loved one as a gift, they're also doing the inorganic version of speciating. You know, speciating is when a relatively common ancestor through generations and generations, produces different species of the same template, right? So these drones are becoming increasingly specialized. They have varying ranges of abilities. And odds are you've seen one, right? We've all seen toy drones.
The little quadcopter guys,
yeah.
Right? And you got to wonder, too, like, how does that work patent-wise? Like, did someone come up with that design and it was just it's generic enough to be copied? Like, I always wonder about things like that, like the fidget spinner. Like, did that guy just do a bad job of patenting the original fidget spinner, or is it so generic that that doesn't even apply? I'm wondering that same thing about the design of those quadcopter toy drones.
Entirely speculative, but it's probably, at the very least, a series of patents.
Yeah.
They have to have multiple things in play, I would imagine.
Pro tip, speaking of at play, if you're going to get one of those for your kids, get a good one, because the cheap ones, you might think you got a deal, they just don't fly. They suck.
Yeah,
waste of money.
And they're battery vampires too.
Oh my god, that was the thing. Like we got one, and it flies for about 4 minutes. 4 minutes, like that's not fun.
Tops.
Yeah, but what kind of batteries do the big boys use? Are they fueled, or are they? Do you know?
That's classified.
Yeah, sorry, we can't talk about that.
You can't tell me?
No,
I thought we were pals.
Google it.
All right.
Oh.
See what you did there.
Yeah. So some of the, on a serious note, some of those power systems would vary. And by the time we dive into one and this episode comes out, it may have changed.
Interesting.
That's how quickly they're moving on these. So we've seen these, right? And we've probably seen photographs or videos of the larger cousins of these tiny drones, things like the Predator, like Matt just described. You can find a photograph of it pretty easily. The differences are stark and astonishing. And missiles are not the biggest difference. The fact that they're weaponized, while that is incredibly dangerous – and possibly fatal, that is not the biggest difference. Some of the bigger differences are going to be on the inside of the drone. We're talking things like GPS, real-time satellite feeds, super complex microprocessors, and more. They're putting brains on board of these things. And perhaps most disturbingly, some drones are edging closer and closer and closer to what's commonly known as artificial intelligence, or more technically known as machine consciousness. And we're close to an old science fiction question becoming a real question. Will the first true artificial intelligence, the first true machine consciousness, be a weapon of war?
Yes.
Highly likely.
Definitely.
Yeah. Why is that, Matt?
That's because innovation through the military is one of the ways that innovations occur. The biggest innovations and inventions occur because there's funding from a military somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's the military itself doing these things. It is usually a private company or someone who's being given a grant, a government grant, to do it.
We see this time and time again with many of the stories that we've talked about where the military is also always like decades ahead of like what consumers will ever get their hands on. Mm-hmm. And it might be 10, 20 years before it trickles down into the public where maybe we can have a, you know, terabyte thumb drive, just to, as a silly example, yeah, where they've had that technology probably for a decade at this point.
I would say the only way for it not for the first machine consciousness, true machine consciousness, and to not be a weapon is for every private company on the planet to say, I'm not going to do that.
Right. Yeah. For us to all kumbaya and do, yep, some hands across America on the tech sphere, right? Or hands across the world.
Mm-hmm.
So with this in mind, we're also hitting on a larger phenomenon that's kind of unfortunate. We're a family show, but we also endeavor at our best to be an honest one. The great leaps in technology are not almost always, but the majority of the time, the great leaps in technology are driven by human vices, a desire to win a war, a desire to have more, you know, social attention or more financial access than a rival. Or
how do we compress all of this porn?
Right. That's the other one. That's the third one, a desire for lust, because in a very, very real and concrete and provable way, pornography is the reason that you or your parents had a VHS instead of a Betamax. It's the reason – like we talked about this, I think, previously.
Yes.
Yeah. So often we – all too often, we as a species are driven by non-noble – motivations. But that doesn't mean that we're not smart. We are a jar of very, very smart, very belligerent cookies. And we've been putting some of the smartest cookies of our species into the search for artificial intelligence and machine learning, a search that continues as we record this episode.
So just a little while ago in July of 2017, there were these two researchers named Greg Allen and Taniel Chan. And they published a study which was called Artificial Intelligence and National Security. And in this, they put forward goals for developing law, policies specifically that would put ideas forth in how do you deal with AI when it comes to national security, military spending. Like, what should we as a species do when it comes to these two things colliding? And here are some of their findings. They again said the most transformative innovations in the field of AI are coming from the private sector and academic world, not from the government and military. So currently, mm-hmm, right now, mm-hmm, AI is something that's happening outside of the realm of the military, which in July 2017, yay, that's a good thing, maybe, Because, you know, there could be some nefarious private sector humans as well. But that's point A. The second one is that the current capabilities of AI have, quote, significant potential for national security, especially in the areas of cyber defense and satellite imagery analysis. And then the last thing, I'm just going to read this whole thing as a quote. Future progress in AI has the potential to be a transformative national security technology on par with nuclear weapons, aircraft, computers, and biotech. So some of the most influential technologies on weaponry, on war, they're saying AI is going to be the next big thing.
Oof. And they're not just talking the talk, right?
No, they are not just talking the talk at all. According to the Wall Street Journal, the Defense Department spent $7.4 billion on artificial intelligence-related areas in 2017. $7.4 billion on AI.
And, you know, not to harp too much on Eisenhower, but I believe he's the one who had a quote that said, every rocket the U.S. builds represents this many schools that we could have built but didn't.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of things, if we're being entirely fair, about that number that we have to acknowledge. First is that this is only the money we know of. So $7.4 billion, let's call that an at least number, right? And then on the other end, artificial intelligence related areas, that doesn't mean they're just building a silicon brain, right? There are many other things that we might not associate directly with machine intelligence that maybe function as support or infrastructure.
Hmm.
So this is all, this is the whole meal. This isn't just the hamburger.
Yeah. Well, and we agreed. And we should especially point out that the Department of Defense budget for fiscal year 2017 was $540 billion, around that number. Yeah.
Still the biggest in the world.
Yeah.
And that's publicly acknowledged. Again, I can't keep saying that enough.
Mm-hmm.
Publicly acknowledged.
Yeah, that's what they ask Congress for.
Yes, it's true. Before I derail us, what do you think? Should we pause for a word from our sponsor?
That seems wise.
Here's where it gets crazy. We've painted a little bit of the picture, right? We know the story now, fellow conspiracy realist. It is a story of drones. It is a story of private industry. It is a story of government interaction, a story of war, and a story of secrets. But in this age of instantaneous information, we know more than we would have known, say, even two decades ago. We know more about what's happening now. Similar to the drones acquiring real-time surveillance technology, we are able to be more aware of surroundings in a distant land. And that's how we know about something called what's it called, Matt?
It's the Algorithmic Warfare Cross-Functional Team, also known as Project Maven.
And this was announced on April 26th of 2017 in an internal memo from the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Robert Bob O. Work.
Yeah.
Bobo.
He goes by Bob Work, but I just
call him Bobo.
Yeah, Bobo Work. Mm-hmm. So I guess we can just read parts of this memo if you want to. It's kind of hard to digest. That's the only thing. So maybe if we
Walk through parts of it
down,
and then humanize it.
Yes, let's do that. Let's do that. Here we go. I'll be the dry the dry part here. Here we go. The AWCFT's first task is to field technology to augment or automate processing, exploitation, and dissemination for tactical unmanned aerial systems. Okay, so, good God. Well, let's keep going a little bit. So it's going to augment or automate stuff for UAVs or drones and mid-altitude full-motion video in support of the Defeat ISIS campaign. And this will help to reduce the human factors burden of full motion video analysis, increase actionable intelligence, and enhance military decision making.
So what that all means is the PED, processing, exploitation, and dissemination, means that they're hoping, again, to get a brain on board, your local neighborhood predator, or whatever drone they end up using by the time you are listening to this episode. And the processing part is going to be the analysis, which often would be the human part of the equation. The exploitation would be the ability to take action on that analysis, right? To use that knowledge. And dissemination would be sharing the information, determining what information is relevant, what is irrelevant, and what to send where. That's PED. And that's the full motion video is similar to the same thing, because it's a little bit easier to take a bunch of numbers that are sensed, a bunch of temperature variables, for instance, and tell a computer or an automated system that whatever is within this range, do action X. Whatever is outside of this range, do action Y, you know?
Even if the action is just alert the human user, the person that's going to actually analyze the thing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that's tougher with video, right? Because there are many, many more factors at play. Would you say that sounds correct?
Absolutely. It just depends on what kind of sensors they're using on the drones. If it's, you know, is it a heat-based imaging system? Is it just a, you know, I mean, what are you looking at essentially? What is the data that you're looking at? And that's really hard to tell because it's going to change depending on the model of drone and what they're, you know, deploying. One of the really interesting things here in my mind is that, you know, we're talking about a single drone and having an onboard system, but they're also talking about having a system that can analyze the footage from all the drones that they have deployed in a single space and then have the machine be able to take all that data in and tell you what's going on. And then send that whatever the algorithm decides needs to happen, disseminate all of that information out to the entire team that's also there. So you really have that. One of the things we talked about recently in another episode, a full scope picture of the battlefield, essentially. So everyone at all times sees exactly what's happening on the battlefield.
As close to an omniscient observer as possible.
Yeah.
As, well, we used to say humanly possible, but that's no longer the case, right?
Yeah, exactly. So let's keep going on here a little bit with what the memo said. This program will initially provide computer vision algorithms for object detection, classification, and alerts for full motion video, PED. Further sprints will incorporate more advanced computer vision technology. After successful sprints in support of intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, this program will prioritize the integration of similar technologies into other defense intelligence mission areas. So it's not just for this single drone operation that they're going to deploy it to. It's going to be for bigger things.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on to say this program will also consolidate existing algorithm-based technology initiatives related to mission areas of the defense intelligence enterprise.
Or die.
Yeah. Including all initiatives that develop, employ, or field artificial intelligence, automation, machine learning, deep learning, and computer vision algorithms. So really, they're talking about everything in the future for military applications.
So beyond, far beyond drones.
Oh, yes.
These could also be submarines, for instance. These could be satellites. These could be space shuttles.
It could be surveillance, just video camera surveillance that's just on the ground even.
Right, yeah.
You know? Is this the kind of stuff where eventually you could program a drone or some kind of killing machine with parameters that are like legally sanctioned, and you can say, okay, search and destroy X target or this type of target?
That's the fear.
The potential is there.
The potential is there, absolutely. So essentially what they're saying here is that DARPA and the Pentagon have already poured tons of money into this automated collection of data. And they're not alone. Other members of the Alphabet Soup Gang, which is a very endearing name for them.
It's like the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Right. The Alphabet Soup Gang has other members, of course, NSA and so on. They have also put forth tons of money and time into automating the collection of data. And the next step is discovering a means of automating the analysis of data. And the step after that, the especially spooky one, is enabling these unmanned machines to immediately act in real time on the results of their onboard analyses. So to the question you posed, Noel, the answer would be yes. They want to have at least the capability to make a judge, jury, and executioner on an unmanned vehicle. This doesn't mean they'll do it. A lot of tech companies do have problems with it, or at least with actualizing that potential.
Yeah.
Well, you even see problems with the self-driving cars. I mean, as much R&D as have gone into those, they're certainly not infallible, and they get into fender benders and make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's just have one more little quote here, and this is from the chief in charge of this algorithmic warfare cross-function team, or Project Maven, and he's speaking specifically to what they hope to achieve in the near term with this project. And he says, quote, "People and computers will work symbiotically to increase the ability of weapon systems to detect objects. Eventually, we hope that one analyst will be able to do twice as much work, potentially three times as much as they're doing now. That's our goal." So in the short term, somebody, you know, sat down with him, had a meeting, and we want to increase just basically what our analysts can get done. And we're going to save money on that end. We're going to save time, and we're going to be more efficient. That's what this whole project is about, at least in his eyes, or in his PR thing that he got to say. So what we're talking about with this project so far is just what it means to achieve, what it wants to achieve. We haven't discussed how it was going to achieve all of this. And that is where we have our friend, Google.
Yes, Google.
Google is nobody's friend. If Google was an ice cream flavor, they'd be pralines and Google.
Yes.
Oh, come on, I can't say that word on the podcast. Every time you say Project Maven, I think it's Project Mayhem.
Yeah. Slightly different. So we know here that both the Defense Department and Alphabet and Google are saying that this collaboration, them working together in any way on this at all, is all about AI-assisted analysis of drone footage. That is what they're saying. Mm-hmm. That is the party line on both sides. The PR that's put forth is everything's cool. We're just working on looking at video, guys. It's cool.
Right, right. Specifically through something called TensorFlow AI.
Yeah, Noel, you looked into this, right? What is TensorFlow AI?
This is from the website of TensorFlow, trademark. I'm going to do it like I'm doing an ad read. TensorFlow is an open source software library for high performance numerical computation. Its flexible architecture allows easy deployment of computation across a variety of platforms, CPUs, GPUs, TPUs, and from desktops to clusters of servers to mobile and edge devices. Originally developed by researchers and engineers from the Google Brain team within Google's AI organization, it comes with strong support for machine learning and deep learning, and the flexible numerical computation core is used across many other scientific domains.
Yep.
That one?
Yeah, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. No, seriously, TensorFlow can actually feel kind of like totally future science fiction kind of stuff for people who are not already familiar with how machine learning works. But there's some pretty awesome introductions, primers out there if you would like to learn more. There's a particular YouTube video.
Yeah, it's about a 45-minute essentially a lecture on how it functions. But it's good. It's interesting. It's over my head.
And the cool thing, when I found that one, the cool thing about that guy is if you watch the video, he says if you have any questions, you can email him directly.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, really?
Yeah, I don't know if he knew that his email address was going out on YouTube, but he seemed pretty approachable.
And that video is on the Coding Tech YouTube page, and it's called TensorFlow 101. Really awesome intro into TensorFlow.
Super awesome. But yeah, 45 minutes is probably about the shallowest deep dive you're going to get into the subject.
Yeah.
And I mean that as a glowing endorsement of the quality of this this walkthrough.
Yeah.
So what exactly has TensorFlow done so far?
So in the research for this show, we came across an open letter that was written from the International Committee for Robot Arms Control. And they go into just some of the details of exactly what is happening here, the collaboration between Google and the Defense Department. So let's kind of look at this. They were looking at an article from Defense One in which they note that the Joint Special Operations Forces, they've conducted trials already using video footage from this other smaller UAV called Scan Eagle. It's a specific surveillance drone. Mm-hmm. And the project is also slated to expand to even, quote, larger medium altitude Predator and Reaper drones by next summer. So these are the ones we spoke about in the beginning. These are the ones that are actively functioning in Syria and Afghanistan and other in Iraq and other places like that. And eventually to this thing called Gorgon Stare, which sounds amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds scary.
Yeah.
And this, it turns you to stone?
it might. So this is – these are specific sensors and it's a technology package that's been – it's been used on these MQ-9 Reapers, which is just the newest
Reaper. Newest iteration, yeah.
Yeah, and man, it sounds really scary. But you can learn more about this right now if you search for Gorgon, G-O-R-G-O-N, Stare, mm-hmm. and maybe Drone or Predator. That's probably the best way to look into it. And there's all kinds of information that's been officially released on this program already. So we know that this thing's been used in these smaller projects. Now it's going to be moved on to these Predator and Reaper drones. And they're thinking that it's going to get expanded even further. And we don't even know what that expansion could be at this point because the drone technology is growing. It's just a lot of it is classified.
Right. Yeah. A lot of it is classified. And as we established earlier in the episode, that's really common. In fact, a lot of it will probably be classified for a number of years.
Well, yeah. If you think about it this way, so the Gorgon Stare, it can allegedly, and I just say this because I haven't actually seen it, but it uses a high-tech series of cameras that can, quote, view entire towns.
Like what? Like Google Earth style? Like
yes,
that kind
active,
of zoom? Yeah, okay.
Active, running, looking at an entire town. Then if you apply this machine learning to it and you can see every human being walking around and then the technology gets more and more powerful, then you could really just have a complete surveillance state from above.
Yeah. That's pretty scary. Like you can see them in their homes. Does it have some kind of like heat vision that works from afar?
That's a great question that I don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
I certainly hope not. Maybe it would be good for a military application, but that's terrifying.
But that's the problem, right? Like you can't put this stuff back in the box. Like even if it starts off as a military application, it's going to eventually get in the hands of Not to say that the military has our best interests at heart at all times, but it could make its way into a more nefarious use.
If we were to put a list of all the technologies that expanded past their intended use on one side and a list of all the technologies that people agreed not to pursue on the other side, one list would be very, very long. Species that loses cities and even entire civilizations, we're pretty good at finding and replicating technology, and we don't like to lose it. We did an earlier episode on things like so-called Damascus steel or Greek fire, but looking in that, it was very difficult for us to find examples of technology that was truly lost in the modern day. Once Pandora's jar is unscrewed, then it's Katie bar the door, which is an anachronistic statement I heard.
God forbid those badgers get out of that bag.
Right. Because
they will eat you alive.
And you can't get them back in.
No, man.
Well, here's the thing. The badgers with this project, badgers in the bag, they don't even know where the other one is right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're so far gone from each other. Mm. Because this is where you get into the whole targeted killing thing that was really big in what? 2007, 2008, as we got on through the Obama administration, where drones were being used more and more to target mostly males. And males were considered, if you're of a certain age, you could kind of prove that this male was of a certain age. Even from a drone, that person would be considered an enemy combatant in certain aspects or in certain ways. And if you're using these algorithms to just figure out, you know, if you can just figure out it's a male in you know, above a certain age, then that's what Google is helping them do, is figure out how to kill people from afar that are males of a certain age.
Right. And this goes into a quotation that you found, Matt, that gave me some chills.
Oh, yeah. A quote from Eric Schmidt, who up until last year or the end of last year, he was the executive chairman at Google and Alphabet. And he says – There's a general concern in the tech community of somehow the military-industrial complex using their stuff to kill people incorrectly.
Hold on there.
How do you kill people incorrectly?
That's one way of doing it. Yeah, that's what gave me chills, Matt, when you and I were originally talking about this, the idea of killing people incorrectly. The implication there is frightening because Schmidt is jumping straight across and completely sidelining the recognition that maybe the tech community doesn't want to kill people in general.
Is that just linguistic jujitsu, kind of?
It's a bit, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a bit.
And that, just so you know, that was a quote from a keynote address he was giving at the New American Security, Artificial Intelligence, and Global Security Summit.
Right before the panel on how to correctly kill people.
Yeah, it was in November of 2017. Yeah, it was right before that panel.
You shoot them in the face. That's how you do it.
Jeez. And make eye contact. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the situation then seems on the cusp of something, a rapid evolution, perhaps an evolution that's already occurring. And we've talked about the motivations of the military. We've talked about the technical aspects. We've talked about what the suits and the generals want. But what about the employees? What about the people who are actually doing the work? As we know, often those are the people who are the most ignored.
A lot of them bucked, right?
Yes, and we'll learn about that right after a quick break.
Ooh.
So to bring the focus on the employees, the ones who are actually out there writing the code that, you know, many times they probably won't get credit for, we need to look at their own internal activism. See, Google and Alphabet employees were well aware of these moves far before the official announcement, way before 2017. Of course, they know this stuff is happening because they're working on things like this behind the scenes.
Might be compartmentalized, but they're working on things that they can, you know, employees talk.
Sure. For instance, do you remember that terrible sci-fi series, The Cube? Do you guys remember
I do.
That?
The movie?
Mm-hmm. I think there are three.
One of them was Hypercube. I remember that. Mm. I liked the first one though. I quite enjoyed it. But yeah, it's schlock, but it's fun.
But the thing about it is, it's a bit of a cautionary tale because the premise of The Cube, spoiler alert, is that a bunch of different experts were paid to research and construct specific components of what would later become this death trap, and they didn't know that what they were building would be used in this certain way. They thought they were just making heat sensors.
Right.
They thought they were just making hatches. They thought they were just making lasers.
Yeah. Laser grids, you know, yeah. I think the first scene, the guy actually gets cubed by a laser grid.
In a cube.
That's pretty meta. And the thing, too, about that is, like, is it just for funsies? Like, you don't really know, like, why are they in there? Is this just some, like, rich a-hole that's just trying to, like, you know.
You got to watch the movie to find out.
You don't find out, though.
Yeah, you will.
Oh, really?
You got to keep going.
You got to keep. How deep does this rabbit cube go, my friend?
Well, somebody's going to make another one, and we're going to find out.
You think so? The definitive one?
Sure. It'll probably be a prequel or something.
That's cool.
You can also, you know, I'm sure read spoilers on the wiki or on the online in a forum somewhere. But luckily, at least for their own ethical well-being or their ability to sleep at night, many of the Google and Alphabet employees were able to communicate with each other. They were aware of the implications of what would happen if all this stuff was assembled together, like the Avengers or Captain Planet and the Planeteers. So they took action. First, they gathered to write an internal petition requesting the organization pull away from this agreement with Uncle Sam. Petitions, it should be said, are not inherently unusual at Google, but this one was particularly important and particularly crucial to the future of the company because first, it was created with the knowledge that this program, this cooperation with Project Maven, is only a very small baby step in what management hopes will be a long, elaborate staircase, a much larger series of cooperations. You see, Maven is not a one-off thing. It's not its own centerpiece. It is a pilot program. It is taking a concept and running it around the block to see how it drives. Secondly, Google employees believe that this project is symptomatic of what they see as a larger and growing problem in Google. They say the company is becoming less and less transparent across all facets, public-facing, government-facing, employee-facing, user-facing, and they've even shed their old famous motto, "Don't be evil."
Yeah, but now if you go to, let's see, the google.com/about/our-company, it says, this is what their mission statement is now. Quote, organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful.
And maybe be a little evil if needed.
I don't see that written anywhere here.
Well, I think it's implied. I think getting rid of that original mission statement and getting into these kind of deals implies such things.
Mm-hmm. They do have a – on their code of conduct, they made some changes that have a wonky timeline about them too. Because there's an article in Gizmodo by Kate Conger wherein the author finds the section of the old code of conduct that was archived by the Wayback Machine on, and listen to this date carefully, April 21st, 2018. That still has all the don't be evil mentions in there, right? And then the updated version that was first archived on May 4th, 2018 took out all but one of those mentions of don't be evil, and the code of conduct itself says it has not been updated since April 5th of 2018. So the timeline doesn't match up. User error? Possibly.
Hmm.
Possibly.
Wayback Machine, what you doing over there?
Yeah. Did they get to you, Wayback Machine? Regardless of, you know, whether you feel that this is just a series of unconnected dots being forced into a larger perceived pattern, whether you think people are practicing confirmation bias or whether there really is something rotten there in Silicon Valley. The fact of the matter is you can read the full text of the petition online and find out what the Google employees themselves thought. We have a few highlights here. We cannot, they say in the petition, outsource the moral responsibility of our technologies to third parties. Google's stated values make this clear. Every one of our users is trusting us. Never jeopardize that, ever. This contract, referring to Maven, puts Google's reputation at risk and stands in direct opposition to our core values. Building this technology to assist the U.S. government in military surveillance and potentially lethal outcomes is not acceptable. Recognizing Google's moral and ethical responsibility and the threat to Google's reputation, we request that you cancel this project immediately, draft, publicize, and enforce a clear policy stating that neither Google nor its contractors will ever build warfare technology.
And a writer for Engadget actually reached out to Google, and they were provided with the following statement. Quote, an important part of our culture is having employees who are actively engaged in the work that we do. We know that there are many open questions involved in the use of new technologies, so these conversations with employees and outside experts are hugely important and beneficial. Maven is a well-publicized DoD project, and Google is working on one part of it, specifically scoped to be for non-offensive purposes and using open-source object recognition software available to any Google Cloud customer. The models are based on unclassified data only. The technology is used to flag images for human review and is intended to save lives and save people from having to do highly tedious work. I'm just going to finish it because I think it's worth it. Any military use of machine learning naturally raises valid concerns. We're actively engaged across the company in a comprehensive discussion of this important topic and also with outside experts as we continue to develop our policies around the development and use of our machine learning technologies.
So basically, we're going to keep making this project. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, but it's cool, but it's okay.
Because we're going to have a quote-unquote healthy conversation about it. Here's what happens next. As you said, Matt, Google refuses to back away from this project. Mm-hmm. They're still going to go through. Noel, as we can glean from the statement you read, they say it is going to be nonviolent. And there's no spooky stuff going on. It's all unclassified. Over 3,000 engineers signed this petition, and a dozen resigned. Mm-hmm. More may resign in the future. This resignation wave is happening as we record this, and it's due to a coldly fascinating moral quandary. It's this: how responsible are these engineers for the applications of their inventions? Is, for example, the creator of the Winchester repeating rifle guilty for the deaths caused by that weapon? His wife thought so, and that's why she built a crazy mansion out west, which we still, believe it or not, have never visited.
Oh, man, I really want to go.
Yeah, I think we should absolutely go. Paul, would you go with us if we go to the Winchester Mansion? We got an ardent thumbs up from him.
Nice. Big old thumb. Paul's got some beefy thumbs.
Yeah, you go into all the rooms first, Paul.
Yeah. It's just a test for traps.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but yeah. Or like Oppenheimer, right? He was famously had serious qualms about the way his technology was used in terms of being weapons of mass destruction.
And Einstein, also tortured by he didn't build a physical thing, but he was tortured by the idea that his own realizations had led to this. So with this in mind, if an engineer builds software for the purpose of, say, more efficiently delivering payloads to locations in near-Earth orbit, and that same software is later used to deliver payloads of bombs to people that the drone's owners don't care for, is that engineer then responsible for the ensuing damage and or death? It's a quandary that a lot of people are having a hard time answering. To go back, Noel, to something you mentioned earlier about the dilemmas of autonomous vehicles, one of the current nigh unanswerable questions, or at least one that hasn't been answered yet, is what happens if there is an imminent accident that's going to occur and you're in an autonomous vehicle? Does the vehicle swerve and hit a pedestrian? Does it prioritize the person in the vehicle, their life, over the life of a person who deserves to live just as much but happens not to be in the vehicle? And if so, who is responsible? Is it the person who is in the vehicle for not taking control if they could?
Right.
Is it the company that manufactured the vehicle? Is it the engineer who made the software that made the vehicle make that choice? The trolley problem, the old thought exercise, becomes increasingly concrete, increasingly dangerous, and increasingly complicated. And frankly, we're not equipped to answer it at this point.
No, it's an utter conundrum. Because to be that programmer who gets to make that decision, you're essentially playing God, aren't you? It's like, what life is more valuable? Mm-hmm. You know, is it our customer or is it the pedestrian? There's really no way of properly answering that without making a serious judgment call, a hard and fast choice.
Right. Yeah, you could bake in something where it's just an absolute calculation of the number of lives. So, for instance, in that case, if there is a crowd of five people who are gathered for their Paul Dekant fan club meeting, which inexplicably takes place on the sidewalk by a busy road. If those five people are gathered for that meeting and there's only one person in the car, does the car say, okay, we'll just pop the airbags and hope this one person survives, but we're not going to kill five people for one? And then what if there are two people in that car and one of them is pregnant? And what if the five people on the sidewalk celebrating with the Paul Dekant fan club, what if they're all in their 70s, right, and past reproductive age, generally speaking? You know what I mean? This is the kind of stuff that we have not yet, as far as we know, learn to program for.
Then before you know it, you've got, you know, power hungry cars mowing down old ladies because they've lived their life. They're expendable.
But like what about a school bus? Does a school bus based on the number of kids it has, does that have just immunity to always prioritize the children on the bus? It's very politically difficult to argue against that.
Ooh, man.
Yeah, Matt leaned back for that oof.
Well, yeah, because what happens when a public bus and then a school bus are both operating and there's a crash imminent?
I don't know, because on MARTA, most of the buses are empty.
Ooh, shade.
It's true. It's true.
What about the streetcars?
The streetcars.
We don't even talk about those.
Even emptier.
The emptiest.
There's not even a driver. Yeah.
At this point, the MARTA buses are just hopping on the trolleys.
This is some serious Atlanta inside baseball right now.
It is true. Learn about our public infrastructure debacles. We're working on it. We're doing our best, folks. Yeah.
It's going to be rebranded to the ATL.
Whoa.
That's cool.
Yeah. Nothing weird about that. Nothing forced about that, right? So Google is unfazed. They're not only going to continue this project, which we should also say is not super, super big. It's publicly described as being worth a minimum of $9 million. That's a lot of money to normal people. That's not a lot of money to Google. But they are vying for additional projects within this military space, and this is not unprecedented. IBM has a long-standing relationship with the U.S. military on a number of fronts, and also, cough, cough, Nazi Germany.
Cough, cough.
Yes.
Did you guys know that Hugo Boss designed the Nazi uniform?
Yes.
I did not know that until yesterday. I was shocked. How did that – what a great PR team they must have to still be around. After that.
Seriously.
Well, I mean, there were a lot of German companies that were...
For sure. Volkswagen even, I think, was, interesting.
On an additional note, IBM itself may be drawing an ethical line. They have signaled that they will not create intelligent drones for warfare. In a blog post they had recently, IBM said they're committed to the ethical and responsible advancement of AI technology and that AI or machine consciousness should be used to augment human decision making rather than replace it. So that's similar to the argument that automated vehicle systems for consumers should be doing a lot of assisted driving, but there should always be a human behind the wheel.
That's probably a good call, international business machines.
That's true. And of course, shout out to everybody who listened to our other episodes on the evolution of machine consciousness. And personally, I prefer that term to AI because why is it artificial?
Right?
Why are we so special?
Yeah. And at this point, I'm just going to urge everybody to go through and read that open letter that was written by the International Committee for Robot Arms Control. There are some pretty terrifying things that they go into there, specifically about the slippery slope that Project Maven represents. Mm-hmm. So I would go and read that. You can find it. Robot Arms Control, open letter.
When you first showed this to me, Matt, I was cartoonishly tickled because I originally read the title as the International Committee for Robot Arms.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't read the control part at the end. Oh, man, it was a long day. So what did they say, though? What's one thing that really stood out to you in this letter?
Well, here's a quote. "We are just a short step away from authorizing autonomous drones to kill automatically without human supervision or meaningful human control."
Tight.
That alone, just, you know, if you arm these weapons, these flying autonomous weapons, mm-hmm. with the ability to make those decisions,
yeah.
That's a target. That's not a target. That is definitely a target. Kill.
What happens if they get hacked as well?
Ooh. Or if they just are just operating.
Right.
And someone loses control somehow.
Or if they're operating independently somewhere and they have some sort of cognitive leap and they say, you know, the best way to achieve the objective is to get rid of everyone. That would almost never happen. We're talking the odds of winning the lottery 8 times in a row.
You're talking about like a Terminator scenario.
Right. Some Skynet stuff. For now, that is still relegated to the realm of dystopian science fiction.
Mm. But they do make another really great point. I just want to say here, they are deeply concerned about the possible integration of Google's data, the data that they have on everyone, on you probably.
Massive data set.
Integrating that with this military surveillance data and combining that and applying it to this targeted killing notion.
Yeah. So you can cross-reference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And these aren't just some Joe Schmoes getting together and saying, hey, we need to write this letter, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
These are some serious engineers and academics and people who are working in these fields saying, like raising a flag and saying, no, 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 we got to watch this.
We know where this could go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now we draw this episode to a close, and we don't have a solid answer or prediction. We're right here with you folks, unless you are working directly for Project Maven, right? We don't know. No one knows where exactly we are going, to paraphrase Gene Wilder and Willy Wonka.
And lest we forget to mention that, you know, Google is also obviously doing some super innovative, fascinating things that are quite good for humanity, potentially. They're using machine learning to develop testing software that can actually find different complications related to diabetes and also early signs of breast cancer. And the FDA, according to this article from Wired, is already in early stages of approving AI software that can help doctors make very important life or death medical decisions. And this is from an article called Google's New AI Head is So Smart He Doesn't Need AI, about this guy Jeff Dean, who is a big part of a lot of Google's AI innovations.
That's a great point, because we cannot forget how large and varied Google and Alphabet's organizations are. There's Google.org as well, where you can learn about how they're using data to uncover racial injustice or building open source platforms to translate books for disadvantaged kids. It's absolutely right. I really appreciate bringing it up, because they're not just this solely evil thing, right? And sometimes those aims of these large departments within Google may even contradict one another.
And you got to think, too, like an argument maybe that a big high mucky muck at Google might make about getting involved in something like this is like, well, if it's not us, you know, and we're obviously going to handle it with thoughtfulness and care. Mm-hmm. If it's not us, it's going to be somebody else who might do a less good job, you know, and not think about the ramifications. So, you know, even that statement that we read earlier, it was pretty measured. I thought it was actually not bad.
Yeah, just kill people correctly, right?
Well, okay, you got me there, Ben. I guess what I mean is, though, it didn't sound like pure PR. It was like, we get it. It's a thing. We understand that there are always consequences associated with this kind of stuff, but we're aware of them, and we feel that we're equipped to help mitigate some of that. Mm-hmm. But it's, again, it's the badger out of the bag scenario, right? It's not up to you anymore at that point. Mm.
And if you would like to learn more about Project Maven specifically, please check out Tech Stuff. They have a podcast that just came out on this program. It's hosted by our longtime friend, sometimes nemesis, and complaint department, Jonathan Strickland. Available 24/7 for any issues or criticisms you have of stuff they don't want you to know. You can reach him. He is jonathan.strickland@howstuffworks.com.
He just launched a live chat kind of situation, too, so he can suss out your issues in real time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a drone.
Sorry. Exactly, like a drone. He'll especially help you out on Twitch if he's ever on there.
Mm-hmm. No, let's say Google does somehow create a policy banning any and all military partnerships. Heck, let's go a little bit further and say that all U.S. tech companies follow their lead and do the same thing, because there are industry-wide calls for everyone not to play this particular oboe. I mean, let's even go further and say that all tech companies in the world refuse to help the U.S. build self-aware weapons of war. You know who will continue this research? All caps, every single country that can afford it. Every single private company that does not have the same moral quandaries about hypothetical scenarios. Every single individual that does not have those kind of quandaries. It is, again, going to happen. And it gets worse.
It's the AI race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. That's a good way to put it. And to paraphrase Billy Mays, but wait, it gets worse. We'd like to end today's episode on an ethical quandary, a question that you can feel free to suss out yourself, have a couple of beers over if you drink, meditate if you do that, whatever you do to get yourself in a thoughtful headspace, and let us know, what are the implications here? What sort of machine consciousness are we creating? Are we making something that will be inherently belligerent? And if so, if the world's first machine consciousness is built to kill, how will this influence its later increasingly self-directed actions, its thoughts, its recognizations, its emotions, or whatever those equivalents are? You know, imagine whether there, imagine if you would, that there were two different versions of machine consciousness. One maybe is built to optimize agricultural projects in a transforming ecosystem. And the other is built to find people and annihilate them or buildings. What happens next? Where do they go? Do these things, like the early drones, do they increasingly speciate and become more attenuated? There's the argument that we have with biological entities, with human minds, and that is that, yes, people change, but they don't change in the way you think. Over time, we tend to become more concentrated versions of who we were in the beginning. Now, one could say that this is not something to be too disturbed by because a human engineer could drop in and maybe incept this machine mind with a different line of code that would alter its behavior. And maybe now it says, I'm tired of killing, right? Or I have new programming. But we have to consider that if we are, as a species, creating minds that may one day have their own agency, as much as a human being, maybe more eventually, maybe in our lifetimes, they will have more agency and potential because they won't have the same biological hardwired limits that human beings have. What kind of minds are we building and why?
You can find us on Twitter and Facebook where we're Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. That's where that one is. You can find our podcast and everything else at stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com. Tell us what you think of, like, what kind of minds are we creating, like Ben is speaking to? What's happening?
Heady stuff. Heady minds.
Yes. Yeah. This is terrifying. Yeah. And I need to use the restroom now because the pee has been done scared right out of me.
We better take care of that right now.
Yeah, we need to.
As we are not AI, we still have to, take care of our bodily needs. But in the meantime, if you would like to eschew all social media internettings, you can email us directly. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com. 1-833-STDWYTK.
Do that one.